Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Angela.
This is Books,
Books Are
Good, actually. And for our late recording of our October book, we read for the spooky season, which is now transitioned into Mariah Carey season. But don't worry, we're going back. Men, Women, and Chainsaws. Gender in the Modern Horror Film by Carol J. Clover. And this is the more recent edition, I think, from 2015, that has a new preface, but it was published in 1992.
And then also there was an afterword that included some early 90s films.
Yeah.
Which was interesting, given it was updated in 2015. Why not include more horror films?
Yeah, I'm not sure there. And maybe that's just how it worked out in terms of the writing, you know, things like that. So let's just talk about our, you know, general feelings about the book and stuff like that. I guess I'll go first, I believe. I don't know who went last time. I never fucking keep track.
I know you can't see it, but I gave you two thumbs up.
Thank you for those invisible two thumbs up. So overall, this book actually helped me think about the lack stuff that we were talking about in philosophy. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, oh yeah, the, you know, cycle analyzing stuff, like, yeah, the lack. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this makes complete sense now.
Yeah, because it's in a physical lack.
Yeah, so that helped. For an academic book, I think it wasn't that difficult to read. It helped that I had very film theory 101 like background, and I've also seen movies, so that wasn't like, oh, and I'm always interested in media, things about the meta-analysis of media and like what it tells about culture, that type of stuff. So, you know, it wasn't so far removed from what I'm used to kind of getting into. It also helped that I think I got this book from from one of Ellis's like videos about rape revenge, like in horror movies. So, and then I think there's also, I want to say Princess Weeks also did a video about horror movies and stuff like that. So I didn't rewatch those before coming on this podcast, but that definitely helped. But I thought what was interesting, we'll kind of go into like the context of this book, was the fact that it was trying to also push back against horror movies are exploitative, they're misogynist, and they are pretty much the downfall of society, especially after the 60s and 70s, and the, you know, change in social structure that we've had. Very much reminding me of, one, you know, Satanic Panic, two, video games, where video games were the, you know, if we play violent video games, they're going to become violent. And I've seen the parallels there.
Also similar to like heavy metal and then rap and hip hop.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of nice just to have like a person who's like, you know what? I'm going to sit down and watch some horror movies. I'm going to also talk to other people and interview folks who also are fans of horror movies and like why. Like, how, like, why do they root on, like, the final girl? Like, what do they feel about it? And then kind of relating the gaze of, like, you know, the camera and, like, kind of what does it say about or what the director is trying to, like, tell you. And then also, like, culturally, what, like, the way that things are framed, how does that relate to, you know, or really to her kind of says about us, like, culturally at that time. So overall, I thought the book was a pretty easy read. There's probably parts I kind of just, like, forgot or, like, was like, huh, after a point. Because there was a couple of just, like, so if you think of the camera, and then if you think of the female, and then the hero, who's usually a male, who becomes a female because she dies, is just like, okay, yes, I started to get. She kind of reiterates that, like, pretty strongly, which is fine.
A lot. Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes I'm just like, yep, I kind of get it. Oh, we're still going over this point. Great. But overall, I think it's good. The only thing I would say there's a couple lacking aspects, which we'll kind of go into, is obviously the big thing is, for me, is the absence of race a little bit. I know where it is focused on the gender aspect of horror movies, and then also you're going to have the other axis of, like, race kind of playing a part, but it's not, it's mentioned in terms of, like, Westerns, but it's not really talked about, and also the way that, you know, a lot of these horror movies did, you know, starred mostly white people. So, like, that's just during that time, that's what it was.
Yeah, I think that is probably the largest factor, is almost every film was entirely white, or if not entirely white, other than, like, Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Or Poltergeist and Poltergeist 2. Those are the only two films that I can think of that she discussed that had any non-white actors in it.
Yeah. So,
but we'll get into it.
Yeah. So, overall, I enjoyed this book. The other thing that was missing, and we'll also get into, is the her focus on certain subgenres. And I understand why, because those, like, the slasher films, Rape Revenge, the to a lesser extent, I want to say, I don't think I heard a lot, or I don't recall a lot of controversy about, like, possession films, but there were, I guess, you know.
The Exorcist at the time, but other than that, not really.
Yeah. The Exorcist, I felt like, kind of got more pushback from, like, Catholics than, like, anything from a, like, a gender perspective, but...
Right.
But, yeah, she just focused on, like, those, like, subgenres, and there's, like, a lot, right, you know, that she could have probably went into, but thinking
what
back...
What other subgenres are there?
I guess, like, she could have done zombie movies, right, I'm trying to think of any other.
I feel like those would kind of fall into the possession slash occult.
Okay.
In a way. Because, like, she lumps a lot of stuff into that, including, like, aliens and aliens.
Yes. Yeah.
So that particular chapter was doing a lot of heavy lifting. But, yeah.
Okay. I can see that, but I... Okay, I guess we can kind of discuss a bit more about subgenres. I'm still pretty new for, like, horror movies, so in terms of subgenre stuff, when it comes to metal, I'm pretty good at that.
Who would have been good to consult before we started recording this?
Who?
The one friend that we have that has a subscription to, like, two different horror streaming services.
Yeah, probably. Or we could have just subscribed, like, for, like, a minute, and then be like, oh, how do they categorize stuff? But anyway, overall, I thought the book was pretty solid. There was a... Wow, I keep being like, oh, and, like, one more thing. There's a couple terminology that is highly fucking out of date.
Yes.
Like, oh, boy. So, yeah, it was very much the words for the time, but I was just like, man, for it was just interesting, because I'm like, oh, right, this was published by, like, Princeton University, and they're saying, like, the R word. Like, okay.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Yeah.
I feel like part of the problem with having, like, or maybe not problem, but had she gone and addressed the issues of language that she was using at the time in 85 through 92 when she published, when she did the update in 2015, some things would be easy to rewrite.
Yes.
You just like maybe swap a word for like a phrase or a sentence or two. Other things she probably would have had to delve into like an entire like subchapter for, and that's why I feel like those did not get changed.
Yeah.
But yes, there's some R words, there's some T words, and it's not, they're not used, I would say, in a derogatory way. I mean, R, for the time, I think they were being used in as clinical as they could.
Yeah.
With the least level of judgment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just something where I was just like, okay, that was the language at the time in academia.
Yep. But yeah, so as I said, pretty decent book, film theory book, especially about horror. I know there's others out there, but I think this is, I believe it's like the first one that actually did like, all right, we're going to take this like, this seriously. And to this day, even though you have like A24 doing these pretty cool like horror movies, still get snubbed at Oscars, still get snubbed all the fucking time. Yeah. So, you know, there's still, unfortunately, that is still a problem 60 years-ish after Psycho, so.
And they will probably continue to be snubbed by the Oscars, given the fact that their new minor partner is saying that they now have to make action films.
God.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this book. It was fascinating. Easy to read for the most part. I enjoyed her particular cadence and the way that she very like upfront but not like aggressively called out people for failing to think their like train of thought all the way through.
Yeah.
I do agree that maybe like the occult chapter could have been split into a second chapter about like, because like, sure, like werewolves could probably go under possession because like it's something that is out of your control. Maybe vampires could as well, because it's, you're being allured by something that is out of your control. But like zombie films, yeah, that she lumps them in there. I feel like that they could be something separate.
Right.
Contagion films would also be like a zombie film, so they could be something separate. And we have seen a fair number of Contagion films since she wrote this book initially, that some of which are also zombie films. Like we've seen with 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later, The Walking Dead, I guess Resident Evil is kind of a Contagion zombie film.
Yeah, for the most part. Actually, yes. I'm just going to say yes. It is, from the text, like, let's ignore the fucking video game, especially after 4. It is, yes, it's a Contagion feel.
And then there's also, I Am Legend. And then outside of specifically zombie Contagion films, there's films like Contagion, The Fog. I'm sure there are others. I'm just not thinking of them. So yeah, I feel like that could, you are right, that definitely probably could have and should have been split off into a separate category. But for the particular time when she was writing this, the genres that were dominant and everywhere, I feel like the three that she picked to focus on and analyze said a lot.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know how much you could really get out of analyzing Contagion films other than like, your money will not save you. Because I don't know that there's that much. I mean, maybe there's some like racial analysis and sex analysis, but like, I feel like it just basically boils down to the rich trying to run away somewhere where whatever disease can't reach them, and then everyone else having to band together.
Yeah, that that's fair. I think like there's that aspect. Okay, so you mentioned The Walking Dead, and I actually just finished reading the comic book. I did not. I tried to watch the TV show, couldn't do
it. Not worth it.
And I listened to a retrospective by Friendly Space Ninja, and I was like, that was a good idea, because boy howdy, they did that boomerang, like they did episodes where they were like, this episode has character A, And then there's a cliffhanger. Like, oh boy, can't wait to episode 2 where we can finally resolve this cliffhanger with character A. Nah, nah, nah. We're going to character B now. Has nothing to do with character A. So you're like sitting there for like a fucking month waiting for to see what the stupid cliffhanger happened with character A. And then it's a month later and you're kind of like, well, what like, there's this cliffhanger and I kind of forgot what the fuck happened with that person. And then, yeah, so essentially they kept that pattern forever and it pissed people off. So The Walking Dead has, like, essentially towards, spoilers. You know, I should have said at the top, I forgot to fucking say this. There's gonna be spoilers for shit. I'm sorry.
Spoilers.
There's spoilers for things. Anyway,
so Neo after a point. Neo kills Dumbledore.
So in the comic books, I think I want to say around, like, around issue 50, they finally, like, settle down in, like, a area to, like, that's kind of sort of fortified. That wasn't the prison that just got own-zoned by this other group of banded dudes. Mm-hmm. So, they, like, they pretty much found, like, a gated community. And so they're, like, defending it. But it was pretty much, like, The Walking, and so they started kind of like rebuilding up their shit, and like they go through a war, and then they find this other community after a point who like are slightly advanced, but they started like having trade stuff. Like they were trying to build back up society. So The Walking Dead for like a good like first part of it was like, oh fuck, there's zombies and what do we do? And then after that, it becomes, oh fuck, we like everything's gone as society. What do we do? So it's. I think there's more to say there than just like, oh, it's the rich people who got away with it. Because like they never explain where the fuck it came from, like at all. Like there's no explanation of here's how it happened. It is, to me, super annoying when they do that because I don't fucking care. And no one should care about what happened.
Sure. Yeah. And it doesn't change how the story unfolds. And that's something you can do that in a comic or even a long running television show.
Yes, yeah.
In a film, not really.
Yeah, you
just don't have enough time.
Yeah, it gets super bogged down, and sometimes like going to like the Resident Evil movie, the first one. So like if you were, so this was like 1999. So Resident Evil 1 and 2 were out, and then 3, duh. So the basic premise of the video game was like, yeah, there's this umbrella corporation that was doing experiments for like biological weapons. And then 2 and 3 just were like, let's add on some more things about this family that like, who gives a shit? But like, you know, the whole thing, evil corporation is trying to make a weapon and then it blow up in their face and affects a small town. And you could look at the Resident Evil from just like, yeah, evil corporation does bad thing. You can also look at it as evil corporation takes over small town. You can, like, there's a couple like axes you can look at. After a while it gets muddied because you're like, let's add more lore things, and that's where everybody always goes wrong. Don't add more lore shit ever. It's bad.
Just make everything like a FromSoft game.
Maybe not that vague.
Fair. But yeah, no, really, really enjoyed this. And yeah, I definitely feel like after reading this, it's going to be good to read something about Lacan, because other than Freud, Lacan was the next most talked about like psychoanalyst. I did end up listening to this for parts of it, and that was a bit of a mistake.
Oh, why is that?
Because I didn't rent an audiobook. I didn't find an audiobook. I fed the PDF into an audiobook reader, or like an ebook reader.
Yeah.
So, some words were very strange. Some words were half spelled, half said. Not being able to choose to skip the footnotes and just having to hold my train of thought and just let these footnotes wash over me until it picked back up again.
Oh boy.
It also broke up every page into its own chapter. So, yeah. But it did help me. And listeners, this is not a fault of the book. I could have sat down and read it. I just planned my time poorly. But really good. Really enjoyed it. I do wish 2015 she had really updated this. And
yeah,
changed some of the language. Split chapter 2 into 2 parts. One of possession and contagion. Built out a chapter on contagion. And then probably also looked at the horror that had come since she was writing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think I really enjoyed the possession like chapter, but yeah, I think it could have been expanded upon a little bit more. And I don't know, it could just be the amount of films she was like watching, or she was looking for films where the primary like victim, you know, was female. And I don't know, maybe zombie movies didn't have as many female victims, or the female characters weren't thoroughly fleshed out in which to actually draw like any analysis from.
Because I mean, then that is a good point, because like this is not like an analysis of all horror. This is analysis of horror focused on gender.
Yeah.
So like it makes sense that Cannibal Holocaust doesn't show up.
Right.
Okay. So like good to keep in mind. But yeah, no, it would be like, I wish she had covered the Saw series.
Oh,
I
boy. Wish
she had covered like torture porn films like Sallow or a Serbian film or the Human Centipede films.
Yeah, like, yeah, cover the like the early aughts, like mid 2010s films that were coming out that I fucking heard about and read enough the description where I was like noped out. Like I was like, oh, because I remember an ex-boyfriend watched the Serbian film and he was like, that fucked me up for like a couple of days. I'm like, yeah, I'm not fucking with that. Like he's a guy who like usually watches horror movies, and he was like, nope, no, dude, do not watch that movie. So I'm kind of curious. And then I've heard other people who are just like, dude, everything, the prosthetic shit was just so obvious that it wasn't even like it was so really cartoonishly that
Of that. Yeah. Like I watched it with an ex-girlfriend at the time, and like we weren't laughing at it, but like we also were not scared because it was like, yeah, that's just a doll, that's just a fake.
Yeah.
But Human Centipede and Human Centipede 2, they did a pretty good job. Anyway, but yeah, no, I do wish that she had updated. It's like Human Centipede 2, a woman is forced to stomp on an accelerator to get away from this madman after she has just given birth in the car. As she's got, like, she's finished giving birth, the baby is, like, shot out of her, and she has to choose to stomp on the accelerator and crush her baby's skull to get away from this absolute psychopath that just had her chained up to 12 other people. And by chained, I do mean stitched anus to mouth, listeners. So there's something to explore there, absolutely, for Miss Clover. But we'll never know.
We'll never know. All right. Moving on to, and I kind of mentioned this, the context of the book, the why. So she kind of says this at the end, like at the beginning, you kind of get a sense of this, but I'm going to sum up the why of this book. It's because the reviewers at the time were fucking sexist as hell about this. Mm-hmm. Like the...
I wouldn't even say sexist. I would say unwilling to do any reading into the material itself because they were either grossed out, shocked, or just refused to do so.
Yeah, because like she mentioned like feminism, you know, at the time did a good job of being like, yeah, this is exploitation because of the way the camera is. Like, there's the, yeah, the shock and everything else. And then, oh, but, like, the latter half is, you know, the woman, like, taking power and becoming the film or the camera's POV switches from killer to the victim hero. So, mm-hmm. like, they checked out at the you know, the villain part, the villain POV, and then they swap over to there. Because the way that a lot of other movies with, like, you know, action movies, even movies that do have revenge generally always start from the hero's perspective, and mm-hmm. generally, and like, even if it's like super violent, like, you know, they mentioned Dirty Harry, and I don't think I've watched Dirty Harry, or maybe I have, but it was on like a TV thing, so everything was like censored. But I remember my mom being like, Dirty Harry is really violent, and she was like not happy my brother wanted to watch that movie. So like, but you know, she, in the book, she's like, yeah, they praise Dirty Harry. They praise mm-hmm. Rambo. It is super fucking violent.
They praise Deliverance.
Yeah, they praise Deliverance. And those movies were violent, but they all included men dying or whatever. So it was like, yeah, that's kind of fine. but
as soon as it is either a woman being terrorized or a woman being raped, they're like, this is the worst. It's like, There's more in this text here.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, instead of dismissing outright kind of the movie, she's like, all right, let's dig in to like what are these directors saying? What is like the camera saying? What's the text saying? Like, what are we actually viewing here? And not only that, I kind of found interesting the like there was also kind of a dismissal of like the audience, like the critics would dismiss the audience like, oh, well, they're like, you know, these boys and men are sadists, you know, they're watching mm-hmm. this, you know, these killers terrorize women, must be sadist, like must be misogynist and like things like that. Which I found like interesting because it's like fine for boys and men to be okay with violence against like other men. Mm-hmm. And then when it's against women and then it gets flipped, then it's kind of like, well, no, it's still bad and also childish and like all this other shit. So it's just kind of an interesting dynamic there to kind of mm-hmm. consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that was entirely their view of things. And I'm sure a fair number of reviewers probably still hold that position and probably still think horror films are denigrating to women.
Yeah.
Even though, like, more so than ever, like, women are front and center in horror films. And often women are the only cast in horror films, frequently. Like, there was a father in the Vavitch, but otherwise it was all women.
Yeah.
Midsommar is very heavily focused on women. What was that film? Don't worry. Anyway, The New Evil Dead had as a woman. Even though, like, there are male characters in it, like, horror is a very female-driven genre. Even campy horror, like Scream Queens, is entirely women-driven. Like, there are male characters, but for the most part, almost every point of view in Scream Queens is a woman. But yeah, no, that's pretty much the context of the book. It's, the reviewers are very shallow, and let's dig into what's actually going on here. There's a lot of discussion of the fluidity of gender in films, in horror films, in rape revenge films and slasher films, there is a swapping of gender for the victim initially being feminized, whether they are male or female, and then the victim hero at the end becoming masculinized and taking away from the individual or individuals that have been terrorizing them or assaulting them, all of the power that they had over them, and turning that power against them. And then the possession chapter, I thought was, I mean, I saw coming in the slasher and the rape revenge, like, slasher, it's just like baked into the DNA that like there's going to be a final someone. It's usually a woman,
right?
And they have to end up triumphant. I mean, they'll have to, but like they usually do. And then rape revenge, it's baked into the name.
Yep.
There's rape, and then there's revenge. So there has to be an overcoming. There has to be a comeuppance. But the possession chapter, I thought was really interesting because. Even it, like, I've seen very few possession films. And honestly, I've seen very few of these films at all.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen the bigger ones, like Halloween, Friday the 13th, The Exorcist. I haven't seen any of the rape revenge.
Yeah, I kind of not into, like, rape revenge shit. I mean, I'm into the revenge part. The rape part, I'm just like, ah, fuck. Like, I kind of need to, like, fast forward through that. But I've heard, you know, I've heard of, like, I Spit on Your Grave and shit like that, you know, so.
But the, like, context in which he talks about in the occult films is, I thought was really interesting because I didn't see it coming, was that even though possession films focus on almost exclusively a possessed woman,
yeah,
they're a vehicle for hyper-masculine men to learn to open up and accept the femininity within them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. I never, like, conceived of Poltergeist in that way or of The Exorcist in that way. But it 100%, 110% makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I completely agree with you, especially kind of the connection with, like, the occult, like, generally occult with, like, women. You know, you kind of see that with, I'm going to probably fuck up zodiac signs, that bullshit. Sorry, yeah.
Astrology.
Yeah, like, that with, like, women. There's, obviously, just, like, that's just the usual, there's just always a connection,
tarot,
yeah, which is, yeah, tarot stuff, you know, all that shit.
Part.
Yeah, like that's all cool. That's like Goth Angela shit right there. You know, and yeah, the opening of yourself to like the black magic compared to the white science type of situation, I thought was interesting. Especially when you consider that a lot of women were like institutionalized. Right. Mm-hmm. And like the kind of call back to the, you know, electroshock therapy, those things where they're like, oh, she's like crazy. But it's like, no, society is fucking crazy. Like, that's the thing. So, yeah, I thought that was good. I forgot what movie, I'll try to find it, but the movie where, the male character had to open up with his friend, and then, he dies, the friend dies, and then he finally like is like, okay, I can finally be with this woman now, which
like properly be with her and not just like,
yeah,
basically be blowing her off even though she chose me over my friend who has now died.
Yeah,
I don't know that one either, the name, that is so many movie names in this
so
book.
Many movie names, but yeah, I thought that was like a really good like example that wasn't difficult to follow, but yeah, it was like, yeah, he could fully do the thing, and it was like it kind of went from it was another thing I wish she touched on gender and like sexuality a little bit, but the kind of more homosexual you know, undertones with that friendship, yeah. And then to the heterosexual marriage at the end, which is, that's kind of, I'm not saying that movie is problematic necessarily, but it is kind of
of its time.
Yeah. Yep. So,
definitely of its time. And then the fourth chapter, which serves as both a little bit of summing up at the very end of the chapter, but for the most part, it is about the camera lens.
Yes.
And about whether it is fair to say that the viewing is always sadistic. And she argues pretty convincingly that, in fact, viewing can be sadistic and it can be masochistic. And right. It often is masochistic. Often directors and filmographers are not looking to show viewers like something that is going to necessarily like titillate them, as they're looking to absolutely like psychologically destroy their viewers.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it makes sense. A successful horror film does not get you're not going to keep butts in seats and people coming to see a film just for like 10 or 20 seconds of like tits and ass. But you are if you are scaring the piss out of your audience.
Yeah.
Or leaving them like excitedly talking about like how triumphant like that end scene was, in spite of, and how cathartic it feels for either the rape revenge to the yeah. revenge of the rape revenge to occur, or the final girl like with Stretch standing on the top of that tower waving around that chainsaw, having defeated all of the family that made up the family in the Texas Chainsaw series, Chainsaw Massacres. So like, and she does this really well through a film. What was that called?
The film is called Peeping Tom.
Peeping Tom. And once again, decried as like sexist and like sadistic film. And she does a really good job of like breaking down the text of the film and how much of the film revolves around the main character, who is both the killer and also a victim in its own way, is like psychologically haunted by the like years of abuse and neglect that he experienced under his father, who spent his entire childhood videotaping him, and not in like a like home movies kind of way, but in like a clinical like psychoanalytic way, to like capture completely all of the childhood of a single human being.
Yeah. With no privacy. So his father just fucking, yeah, terrorized him the entire time. And then he wrapped around to being the abuser to these.
Yes. And so, like, that was, like, I expected chapter 4 to just be like, oh yeah, summing up. But, like, that was fascinating as well. And it really opened my eyes to what it, like, thinking about what it is we're being shown when watching film.
Yeah, I think that is, like, sometimes we're watching bad movies, right? There's, like, certain, like, you kind of easily can start pointing out, like, why is this shot going on for forever? And, like, what does that convey? And then after a point, you're just like, oh, no, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. But, like, once you kind of, like, watch a competently made film and then like not a well-made one, and then you're like looking at just like camera shots and just how things are laid out, you're like, oh yeah, there's just such a huge difference.
Looking at you, Neil Breen. I love you. You scare me, but I love you.
You can even say the same for like video games and stuff like that. You know, I think the first time I've heard the term male gaze came up in like, you know, feminist theory, frame frequency, you know, talking about video game stuff and like using a feminist theory, and just
absolutely can see it being a like, I mean, not just see it, it that is way more of a problem in video games, because like outside of the moments of action, like you're not getting thrill out of like, or I mean, in horror films you are, but most, I feel like most horror like games, you're not getting TNA, really.
Depends on who it. There's a series called Metal Gear Solid.
Okay.
And sure. Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's the one Simon's... I'm going to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. However, things like Amnesia or
right.
Five Nights at Freddy's or the like all of the like ghost hunting games
right.
or the possession games, like there's no male gate.
No, generally not. Yeah, it's very interesting how the like video games aren't, and I don't know if maybe they should be, but like the way that they use the camera is completely different from movies, obviously. Mm. But
well, it is,
some
it
at
is
times
pretty moving.
Yeah. But the like when in terms of like cutscenes, you know, that's like kind of yes. I'm talking about. Like cutscenes yes. is like very interesting. How do they frame them? And that's why there's like a cutscene director, and you think, oh, they don't need one, let they
sure.
do.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. I'm thinking of one of the few Final Fantasy at the only Final Fantasy game that I played, Final Fantasy X. Why did the one caster woman, why were her tits that big?
Lulu, yeah. Yeah.
They're obnoxiously huge.
Yeah.
It what?
Another game that is also not a horror game, but Mass Effect 2. The amount of times that the camera, there would be a speaking thing. So it's like, you know, there's a lot of back and forth talking. So they're probably like, mm-hmm. okay, let's try to make it like a TV show, a bit more dynamic, and we'll start panning around, you know, the room or whatever. The amount of times it panned around on Miranda's ass is mm-hmm. like so obnoxious that BioWare during like their re-release were like, yeah, we don't know what the fuck was going on there. Like that wasn't intentional. Like we weren't trying to pan on her ass all the time, but so they kind of fixed it in their Legendary Edition. But yeah, it was like everyone's like, yeah, this was a thing that
is it
was.
Why that's called sometimes ass effect?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
So yeah. All right. Anything else we want to add here in terms of context or any other explanation of the book?
I think I'm just going to go ahead and say it early. Listeners, read this book. It's a good book.
It's a good book, yeah.
Yeah.
So the next piece, which might be a lot shorter because I realize, this is not her problem. It's a Hollywood problem in yes. the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and early 2000s. So this book does mention, an economic disparity. I say parity, like I need full, but disparity, especially the city and country axis, which I thought that was really good.
That was really interesting. That fell under the rape revenge section. Listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of definitely fell in the rape revenge. It also, in a way, falls in the possession area because you have the science and then the, you know, which are university kind of folks. Mm-hmm. And then, like, generally, the black magic is for like superstitious people, right?
People
so,
who are more in touch with nature. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so as part of this, the city country, and more specifically the country, it's usually poor white people. She made a comparison where like this, you can kind of see like the history of like, this is also like the Western where you have the white folks going into the Native American lands that they took and being like, we're so sorry. And, you know, then the Native Americans attack or whatever, or another way more richer white person comes and attacks and tries to take their land or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned that, this is also part of for black folks, it was the... it's that stupid KKK movie. I fucking forgot off the top of my head.
It's not Triumph of the Will.
I think that's might have been it. I'll go search. But it's like the black and white folks. So that's kind of the only time she mentioned like black people. And I realized, you know, I was like, this book is really focused on gender, which that's like fine. That's been like the main thesis type shit. Mm-hmm. And I really like part of me wishes like there was some focus on like the difference between white and black women in like horror mm-hmm. films. However, horror films didn't really have black people Or if they did, they fucking died early. Yes. And or were cowardly and died early. Like, there's a lot of, like, to go into the race of horror. And that's probably why I think as I bought this book, there was, like, recommended book, why the black guy, like, why do black men die first or something like that. So I was like, okay, there's just a separate book about this.
I know where we're reading next Halloween.
Yeah, for sure. So I, like... You know, I don't think it was an intended omission or anything like that. I don't think it was, like, malicious. It just, the major movies she watched, which are, you know, the movies that were pretty controversial, were primarily white people.
All white. Yeah. Yeah. While you were talking about that, I was starting to think about dialectics. As one is wont to do. And I kind of want to circle back to Rape Revenge, because you were talking about, we were talking about the, and I totally, before I move on to this next one, 100% agree. Like, had this just been an entire review of marginalized groups within horror, I feel like it absolutely would have been in her wheelhouse to be able to cover and address that.
Yeah.
In an appropriate way. But the book might not be out yet.
Yeah.
She'd still be going. I don't know. Maybe it would have taken her another year or so. Maybe 2 or 3 years. But who knows? I've never published her. So maybe she did initially to like look at or like do a series looking at different through different lenses of marginalization. Okay. I've done gender dynamics in horror films. What about racial dynamics in films? What about disability dynamics? But I guess we will just have to read somebody else for those things. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Because we will. We will. But so going back to rape revenge, the rape that is perpetrated, like in I Spit on Your Grave or Deliverance, is initially perpetrated, at least in the text of the film, by these people in the country. But really, they're enacting the first revenge.
Right.
In the rape revenge. And then the revenge to the rape happens as revenge to the first revenge. And then that individual or those individuals who are from the city then go away. And the city learns nothing about
them. Right, because she doesn't go to the police. She doesn't go to some institution.
But even then, like, going to an institution is not going to change how, as a single individual being like, hey, this happened to me, and it happened to me because of the things that my city has done, or our state has done, or our country has done to this area, resulting in people feeling disenfranchised, disempowered, wanting to seek revenge in the form of violent rapes, vicious attacks, etc. Not saying that these things are justified, but that is the framing context.
Mm-hmm.
The city, the state, the country will not change.
Right.
And the chain will begin again.
Yeah.
Until we get rid of capitalism.
Yeah, I thought this part was, or this chapter is really good, because she also goes into, like, the ones where they do have a, go through the criminal system, you know.
Oh, the
go
accused.
Yeah, the accused. Like, okay, yeah, there was one where they, like, tried to do it, but, like, the man had to be the star witness, because otherwise, yeah, if he wasn't the witness, then it didn't happen at all.
He said, she said, and then... Right. Exactly. And, well, so there was... I think there were two different ones then who went through the legal system.
Yeah.
Because there was the accused where he got on a technicality.
Right.
But then he gets out and then tries to rape the victim's younger sister. And then she kills him
right.
with a gun. Whereas the other one, where there was the male witness who testified, that wasn't a technicality. Like, they just got charged and convicted on the crimes of rape. So I think that was two separate
films. Yes. Yeah, there were two. Okay, so there were two separate films that dealt with the justice system. One where it was...
It worked.
And then there's one that fucking didn't work, which is, yeah. And
even then, the one where it worked, like, from her description of, like, the final shots, like, the victim is still, like, left feeling, like, impotent and broken. And, like, the shot, like, pans away and, like, she's left just sort of feeling drowned in a sea of people on the street outside of the courthouse.
Yeah.
So, like, it's kill your oppressors is what these films seem to be saying.
So, there's a movie, I believe it's called, came out 2 years ago, and it was about this lady who, her friend was raped and, like, I think probably killed herself, so she was trying to, like, get revenge on her, but what rubbed me, I'm gonna go find this movie, hold on.
Sure. I also, while you're looking for that, as another thought on what would be interesting for her to have talked about in more modern films, Jennifer's Body and Teeth.
Oh yeah, she like mentioned teeth and like stuff like that, but didn't go on to talk about it.
Right, because like she would have had to like write another section.
Yeah.
So I wonder if she's still alive.
I was thinking that too. I was just like, man, we were like talking some mad shit about.
No, she's fine. She's done a service to the world in writing this book. I you know me. I always want more.
Of course. I am gonna like find this fucking movie later, like after we're done recording. Okay, it came out, I wanna say like either 2020, 2021 or something like that.
Mm.
Whole point is like her rapist got off on like a technicality, and the friend like dropped out of university or like grad school and eventually just kills herself. So her friend decides to get vengeance first by like going to these clubs or whatever with these men and getting like looking like they're like she's drunk, and then they try to take advantage of her, and she, I guess, either like threatens them or like tries to tell them like, hey, this is like, that's pretty a fucked up situation where you could have like raped me or whatever. She eventually finds the two guys who raped her, and she gets in a situation in which she like has like, she knew she was like gonna die, and like, you know, tells all their crimes, is like, I have the evidence, blah blah blah. She gets killed, and apparently it was gonna end with them, the two dudes, just burning the body, and like that was it. But people were like, oh, that's too bleak. But so at the very end, like at the guy's wedding or whatever, like she still dies at the wedding. She like sends a text message to like the cops, and they come and arrest them or whatever. And like the movie, like granted, I didn't watch it because I just was like, okay. It's just one of those movies where I'm like, yeah, the institution failed you already. So why are you calling the cops? Which are known to fail at rape cases, to be like, this is a happy ending to this movie. It's like, no, like if you're trying to portray like a realistic thing, the realistic thing would have been the bleak ass ending, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, yeah, these dudes, these like white dudes who were pretty affluent got away with murder. Like that is just generally what happens.
Yeah. So I know why now that she hasn't written more. She has. She's written a lot more. But in film theory, all of the rest of her writings have been articles about legal movies. And she's got like 5 or 6 articles about that.
Okay.
But then her actual like academic like pursuits have all been about Norse mythology.
You know what? Good for her. If she just wants to dig into fucking Norse mythology, hell yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
like Warrior Maidens and Other Sons, Journal of English and Germanic Philology, Volsunga Saga and the Missing Lie of Marie de France in Sagnas Kemen, Studies in Honor of Herman Paulson on his 65th birthday, 26 May 1986. Or Hildegrun's Lament, Women in Blood Feud, in Structure and Meaning.
Okay, maybe we should read articles about Norse mythology.
For if they're written by Harold Clover, sure.
Sure. Yeah. I finally found the movie. It was Promising Young Woman. It had Bo Burnham in it.
Downloaded that because he also directed it.
Yeah. So, I just didn't care. Once I heard that ending, I was like, okay, whatever.
I will, once it gets to that point, I will just turn the movie off and be like, okay, so here's the bleak ending that it was supposed to be.
Yeah. And,
Bushko had stuck with his vision.
Yeah, so the writer, I believe it was the writer, she kind of was like, yeah, I wanted it to end like this. She wasn't going to do any like violence against them. She was going to like do it this way. That was like, I guess, a moral, like moralizing. And it always bugs me when we kind of do gender essentialist on action, like male, violence is masculine. So if you're doing violence, it's like you're rejecting your femininity or like other bullshit. So it always annoys me where it's just like, yeah, but like, you can just get a gun and just kill these guys. I don't know. Yeah. I understand from like, from a story perspective of what you're trying to say as a thing, like what you're trying to say is that, you know, you have a message that you want to do, but sometimes I'm just like, a gun would have solved your problems, lady.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know people will probably disagree with me, and that's fine. I'm like, Adam, that movie.
At our podcast handle, we don't fucking care.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't like Promising Young Woman. I know it was like a darling for a lot of people, but I was just like, this sounds fucking stupid. And I'm like, it's a revenge story without any of the revenging, like no violence. I'm out.
Wait,
sorry.
No violence.
Sorry, it's the violence on women only.
And then, okay. Unfortunate.
Like,
unfortunate. I guess we've already answered 5, but let's talk about 4. Has modern horror movies, or have modern horror movies, moved away from the pattern killer's gaze, victim's gaze? I don't know.
Let's see. So let's talk about Vuvuzela, because that's a movie you both seen, right?
Nope.
Oh, you haven't seen Vuvuzela? Okay.
I have not. I've been meaning to. I should.
This might be a difficult question to answer and or...
Have we both seen the modern Evil Dead?
Yes, I have.
Okay, me too.
Okay, so...
But that one's not really like... I mean, it's kind of a possession film.
Yeah.
But...
It's like kind of a possession film. It's also like... It kind of follows the killer's gaze a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, but...
In the sense of like the everything that you're seeing in the mirror, whenever anyone like leaves her and like the camera shifts slightly and you can just see the demon in a reflection of her.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But then like that's not really like the killers.
Yeah.
We're just seeing the killer.
Yeah.
So it's maybe like odds are the. I mean, obviously, directors.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely, it's, you know, I wonder if it was more in the 70s and 80s, like, the style at the time, right? And then it kind of moved away from that. Now, unfortunately, I don't know, like, Scream to me is, like, the modern, like, horror, but, like, there was stuff still being, horror movies, obviously, through, like, before Scream came out. So, like, where was that, like, shift from, okay, we're doing the killers to victim to,
third person,
yeah. Like, more of a, kind of more of a disassociation, right? Kind of, like, you don't necessarily identify with the victim or the killer.
Maybe around the time of, like, was Scream before or after found footage, really? Like,
it was before. Oh, man. I think it was, like, a little bit before.
Okay.
Blair Witch Project was 19.
Yeah, so it was before. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm trying to find just a pure list of horror films. Okay, so list of horror films by decades, 2010s, 2020, and 2000. Okay, 2000, 2001, 2002. Okay, listeners, we're going to make you sit through all of this.
No. Oh, yeah.
American Psycho is listed as a horror.
Oh, there's an interesting conversation around thrillers and horror, you know.
I did have, I don't know if we can point to Scary movies listed as a horror. That's just, Shriek If You Know What I Did Last Friday the 13th.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my. We'd have to probably circle back to that. I don't know if we know enough about modern horror to answer that question.
All right, I'm going to just do a hot take. I think it has moved on from the killer to victim gaze, because I think the focus has been mainly been on the victim. Like, like
third person.
Yeah, or third person. But, like, generally you see everything from the victim's, like, point of view, right? Like, the so, for instance, like, the opening of Scream, right? You have, well, okay, actually, I take that back. Because there's parts of you, of the movie, or, like, the opening scene where you're kind of watching Drew Barrymore through the windows, or, you know, through the door a little bit. And then it switches to her, like, you know, making her popcorn, and then finding her boyfriend dead on the fucking, like, pool, and then, like, running. But it doesn't, like, after that, it fully switches over to the main character, and, like, following her around, instead of, like, what the fuck is, like, her boyfriend doing, or whatever. So, I guess because that movie was more of a mystery, in a way, like, it was a horror movie, but there's also a mystery aspect of, like, who is the killer. So you need to be kind of more focused on the people who are trying to do the whodunit, like, trying to figure out the whodunit, than the killer itself. Also, it could be, like, a stylistic choice, right? That could have, like, moved on from this type of pattern. I don't know. So I feel like it's moved on.
I would agree. I also feel like killer's gaze, victim gaze really only applies to slashers.
Yes.
Because, like, for the most part, like, rape revenge films, for a good or a worthy rape revenge film that isn't just, like, it doesn't exist just to sexualize the victim. You're always from the victim's point of view, because you don't want to, you want your audience to feel fear from the rapist. You don't want them sympathizing from the rapist with the rapist at any point. And then you want them to sympathize with the victim and then root for the victim getting their revenge. So the lens always has to be from the victim's point of view. And if it isn't always, it has to almost always be from the victim's point of view. And then poltergeist or possession films or occult films, I feel like those are usually third person. Like, there isn't something, like, lurking outside your window. Like, it's lurking inside of you.
Yeah.
And then, so, like, it really only applies to slasher films. And I don't know how many slasher films there really are anymore.
Honestly, not many, and the ones that are there are fucking sequels to movies that should have not have sequels. Halloween, and whatever, the H2O, all of them, whatever, doesn't matter. They're all bad. And some
Jason
be like,
X, no. Freddy versus Jason.
Jason X and Freddy versus Jason. Yeah, all the, it's the stuff that like pioneered that, and then you're just kind of like, why do you keep doing this?
I don't know. Did you know that the last horror movie came out in 2003? It's not the last horror movie. It's just called The Last Horror Movie.
No, I didn't.
Anyway. I'll agree with your hot take. I'd say almost entirely that movies these days either have a third-person view that almost entirely centers around the victims, or the victim hero, or that the gaze is a mix of third person and from the perspective of the victims or victim hero. And very rarely do we get any of the killer's gaze, and very rarely is it the case that the killer's gaze is focused on early and dropped later. So are any new categories? I mentioned one.
Found footage.
Yeah. And then there's also, I feel like, so at the time of her writing this book, body horror would have been a thing.
Right.
Erotic horror would have been a thing. But found footage is new. Meta horror would have already been a thing, but I feel like things like Midsommar and other A24 films, I feel like she probably would have categorized them separately. Maybe? I don't know. I mean, they are kind of psychological horror for a lot of them, and that's been a long-standing genre.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, in a way, there's definitely, a thread through a bunch of horror movies. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, as you mentioned, psychological horror, and of course, like, the tropes, right? And then, like, it would be interesting to try to apply, like, what the camera wants you to see with, like, found footage stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of any other, like, subgenres that kind of been
torture porn.
Yeah, I don't know what that's like. We say torture porn. I know there's like there has to be the proper category, but yeah, I guess torture porn. Just as we got more, as we figured out the realism aspect,
it probably is a mix of body horror and psychological horror.
Yeah.
Because like so much of it is just playing with like just pure gore.
Yeah.
But then some of it, a lot of it is also playing with, like, it's not like, oh, you're running away from a slasher. It's like, no, you're just trapped in a room. And, like, there's no escape. And you were just going to be disfigured now. And then we're going to watch that. And that's psychologically disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless the props aren't great, in which case there's relief in the comedic form. And just like everyone is horrified that this like very obviously like doll's head has been ripped off.
Yeah.
But I would say those are the two, like, for lack of a better term, torture porn is like a new melding of genres.
Yeah, I think a melding of genres is definitely more of a thing.
Than just taking a single trope.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, like, a melding of genres. Because, like, there were, like, body horror and psychological horror films of the past. But it's the fact that, like, so much, as you mentioned, so much realism has been injected into these films. Where it's, like, you can see yourself being, like, chained up in a room and forced to play Saw's games.
Yeah.
And it like it's not out of the realm of possibility to like see these, whereas like Cronenberg stuff, like it's body horror, it's occult often, it has some aspects of psychological horror, but like it's not torture porn.
I agree there. I think, you know, it's kind of like metal. Like there's a lot of different genres that kind of meld together, and you can try to sit there and be like, okay, well this has like a little bit of like blackened because of the way the guitars sound, and then there's like harsh vocals, but they sound this way harsh, so that means that they're more death metal, and be like, so they're blackened death metalcore. And like at the end of the day, it's like, well, it's just metal, right? So it's kind of like same thing with horror. Like at the end of the day, it's all horror. And I know I mentioned like, oh, could we categorize thriller within horror? And I'm like, I think you could.
I mean, you know. Mulholland Drive is listed as a horror film. Mm-hmm. I would not consider that a horror film. Maybe it's like a psychological.
Yeah, and I think
a David Lynch film.
Yeah, I think some people, when they think of horror movies, are like, oh, jump scares. And there's like a lot of movies where they don't. It's just very tense.
Yeah.
And I sometimes consider those thrillers. However, actually, no, I don't. I don't know why I consider that. I guess thrillers for me are like, it's tense, but there's like a lot of action.
Mm.
Like someone will, there'd be a lot of, I mean, a lot of shooting.
What would you classify Shutter Island as?
I don't know. I never watched it.
I could see it being classified as a thriller. I could see it being classified as a psychological horror.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I think the line there, if there's more, like, if the locations change, like from city to city, I'd say it's just a straight thriller.
Yeah.
But if it's like, if you are stuck in a single place and it's billed as a thriller, that's probably just a psychological horror.
Gotcha. Okay.
I am. Once again, we're not horror experts, folks. Actually, we are, but you can't ask us for any proof.
So we'll not take any further questions. Thank you.
None. We both have PhDs in horror films.
Yes. From Fuck You University. Okay. Yes. Anything else about this book, or any other closing comments, thoughts?
Read the book. It's a good book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Got and let me talk to my family about phallic inversions. And they were just like, fuck, but they're used to that. So it was good.
Good. Yeah, it's a great conversation starter. Yes. Also, it will make you, if you really like horror movies, I think this is a book worth like reading, especially if you want to like talk a little bit deeper about them, because most people are like, aren't those horror movies? Like, they probably think of fucking Jigsaw, and you're just like, guys, it's deeper. It's like you know, you tell people who watch anime, and there's like, it's all this shonen shit. I'm like, no, it's much deeper than that, damn it.
I have listened to a podcast sub-series about the Jigsaw films, and even them, they are much deeper than they seem.
There you go. Bam.
So, like, yeah, no, there's actually a lot of class and race analysis.
Yeah, I mean, even in the fucking Purge, there is, you know, a bunch of shit in there. And that was, and it's like, it smacks you on the head with, I haven't seen them, but from what people talked about, I'm like, no, it hits you over the head with that shit. Like, it's not hard, difficult to miss.
It's a lot more subtle in this. You have to, like, pay attention versus, like, the Purge is just like, we are doing this to get rid of the pores.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we are going to switch up our reading list. And by switch up, I mean just push things back a month. Because of the conflict in, I shouldn't say conflict, that kind of undermines it. Because of the, you know, genocide in Gaza that's occurring right now, that is being backed by the United States, because we're fucking stupid about this shit. We're going to read 10 Myths About Israel by Ilan Pappé. I will link the Verso books link. It's for free. I think it'll be probably free for a fucking while. Verso Books does a lot of like really cheap like books or free books every once in a while. Yep. So yeah, just pick it up.
Yep.
And
we have read Ilan before with Noam Chomsky. So This should be good.
Yeah. And December, we're going to still read Half Earth Socialism. And then January is How to Read Lacan. So we're just pushing things back by a month. But yeah, we're going to just add a book for November, just due to current events. And anything else, Jimmy?
Books continue to be good.
Books are good. Actually.